melted ice soaking the sheets and pillow around his head. The pain wouldn't let him get back to sleep. He'd been dreaming of the cop who gave him the handkerchief. In the dream, he didn't help. He laughed. Chapter 21. Chris. The call came in at 7 a.m. Hard to think of it as a good thing. His girlfriend, Sally, groaned, rolled over, and wrapped a pillow around her ears. Even through a fog of sleep, Chris recognized the voice immediately. Roger Meegan, a friend of sorts. A cop. An unlikely friend. Overall, Chris didn't think highly of cops. He'd met some he liked quite well. Roger, for example. But it discouraged him that the only honest, idealistic, unjaded cops tended to be the brand new ones. He didn't figure he blamed them for callousing up, not in a world like this one. He fought the tendency himself. Maybe if he could fight it, so could they.
Sorry, Chris, I forgot you liked to sleep in.
What he liked had nothing to do with it. He rarely got to bed until 3.
Yeah, I'm not sure, really. I don't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe a story. I don't know. I guess that sounds stupid. Wake you out of a sound sleep and say maybe it's nothing. But if it's something, it's something big. Real big. I just thought it might be a good thing for you to hear first. I mean, it's known, but you know, one little angle of it. If you could break some pattern, if there is a pattern. I'm not making much sense, am I?
You're sure as hell not, Roger. Slow down, huh? Let me get my brain cells back in line. One fact at a time.
Were there facts involved? He hadn't heard any yet.
You know, gang killings have taken a real drop lately.
Yeah, I heard that. But it's just a fluke, right? I mean, what else could it be?
I don't know, Chris. I figure that's where a good investigative reporter comes in.
So you want the name of a good one?
Shut up, man. You're good. You know you are. Look, 2 months ago, the number of shootings drops 80%.
Drops to 80%?
No, by 80%.
I didn't know it was that much.
Well, everybody kind of wants to lay low about it, like you just know it can't last. Everybody acts like it's magic or something. We just stay real quiet like we think, well, I don't know, scared away or something. Then last month, one gang death in all 5 city boroughs. One, Chris. Do you realize how remarkable that is? I mean, in a good weekend sometimes we'd get 2 dozen. I mean, not a good weekend, but, you know.
And this month?
Well, everybody's alive so far as we know.
Chris felt his brain pull away into the intricate strain he associated with contemplating infinity. Hard enough trying to figure out how things happen, but why they don't happen? Like doing a story on the wind. What would he do? Interview people on a street corner in the South Bronx?
Excuse me, ma'am, what's your theory on why you weren't hit by a stray bullet last month?
You think there's a reason?
Man, everything has a reason.
Want to put your next paycheck on that?
There are no accidents in this world, Chris.
He almost scoffed, but caught himself. Imagine taking the jaded side in an argument with a cop.
Roger, where in God's name do you think I'd begin with something like this?
Start with a guy named Mitchell Scoggins. He knows something about something. We picked him up on an illegal weapons charge. Went out to settle a score with some rival banger, but nobody got hurt. He said it was a point of honor. But what honor? Whose honor? Since when is it a point of honor to go after your enemy with a gun and then not kill him? It's like a new gang law or something. But he won't tell me anything about it. I'm the man, you know. He's not going to talk to me.
Where's Mitchell right now?
Doing 30 days at county.
1993 interview by Chris Chandler. From Tracking the Movement. Mitchell.
It's not a New York thing. I mean, now it is. But it didn't start here. It started in L.A. I mean, way out here. I mean, word on the street, they saying that.
Chris, I hear you know all about it. I hear the whole thing started with you.
Not even close. Nice try, man. You think I got ego, huh? I tell you what the word is. Guy named Sidney G. He take credit for the whole thing. Tell you he the guy thought the whole thing up. Not that I ever met him. Hell, Sidney tell you all kind of shit. That's the word on the street. Others say, no, Sidney G might got a start in L.A., but it's not his. Just picked it up somewhere. It's brought it back.
What? Brought what back?
A movement.
This is all part of a movement?
It moves, don't it?
Tell me about it.
I don't know. I don't see how you one of us. I mean, who the hell are you? Know what I tell you? If you cross me, then I come after you. But I wouldn't kill you.
now unless I'm all paid back. For what I mean. Then I'd say, I come to kill you, but man, did you luck out. Then I would tell you. It'd be, like, part of my job.
What did you mean, forward? You said something about being all paid back, but you changed it to forward.
Now, you need to go see Sidney G. He liked to talk.
Know where I can find him?
Shit, no. Never even met the man myself.
He direct dialed the West Coast after 5, New York time, to save a little money, since this probably wouldn't work anyway.
Parker Center.
Detective Harris, please.
One moment.
She clicked him onto a silent hold. He sat for several minutes, fidgeting, jiggling his leg. This was such a waste of time. Then there was ringing on the line.
Harris?
Harris? Chris Chandler here.
Hey, buddy, what can I do for you? Kind of a zoo here. Gotta talk fast.
Well, I thought maybe I could call in a favor.
If it's legal, then it doesn't have to be right this second.
No, whenever. Tomorrow, Monday, whenever. Thought you might go through your computer, see if you can find me a banger named Sidney G.
Last name?
I don't have it. I know that doesn't help.
What do you need on him?
Well, anything that might tell me where he is, like if he had a parole officer, say, then I'd know how to get in touch.
Yeah, this'll take me a few days.
Whatever.
There'll be dozens of Sidney G's.
I'll just have to track them all down, I guess. Just get me a list.
You're alive, man. Give me 3 working days.
Harris faxed him a list 2 days later. Sidney Greenaway, Sidney Gerard, Sidney Garcia, Sidney Gilliam, Sidney Guzman, Sidney Guerrera, Sidney Galeglia, Sidney Garris, Sidney Gant, Sidney Gonzalez. All gang involved. 3 out on parole. 5 with only last known addresses. 2 currently incarcerated. Chris took 2 months tracking them all down. He thought it made him feel alive. Sally said he'd become totally obsessed and moved out. Maybe temporarily. Maybe permanently. Depending on when he came to his senses. He never found Sidney Gerard. The other 9 Sidneys had no idea what the hell he was talking about. He lost 2 other writing assignments in the meantime and 8 pounds, and started drinking again, though not all that much at first. It bothered him, thinking he would always know it was Sidney Gerard because it was always the one you can't find. Looking for a man named Sidney G, originator of the movement, want to make him famous, no personal questions asked, or anybody else with info on Sidney G or the movement. Something about being paid forward or paying forward. Write to C. Chandler at P.O. Box below. Cash reward for right info. He placed the ad to run for a month in the L.A. Times, then decided he'd wasted his money. Homeboys don't read the Times. And he had no money to waste, because he'd done no real work for too long. He visited his brother and borrowed another grand, which was loaned with no guilt or bad feelings. He'd done it before and had always been good for it. Then he placed the same ad in the Valley News and the L.A. Weekly. He opened a P.O. box and tried to work on another story. Every day, he checked the box. Every day, it was empty. Not even crank letters from imposters out for reward money. Where would he get more money if something broke?
Dear C. Chandler, somebody I know see your ad in the Weekly and show it to me. Sidney G. didn't invent nothing. Not in his whole life. He left me with 2 bastard kids. He don't care. He is such an asshole. He got that thing from somebody he met in a Tascadero. He hide out there when things get hot. But it don't work forever. Last I hear is sorry butt in jail. I don't know where or care. But his name ain't Sidney nor G. That's just what he call himself. His name, Ronald Pollock Jr. No wonder you can't find him. I hope you got more trouble for him. I hope it's a trick. That's why I write this. Not for money. But I need money real bad. With these 2 kids. If you want to send some. Yours truly, Stella Brown.
1993 interview by Chris Chandler in Soledad State Prison. From Tracking the Movement. Chris.
You could be a famous man. Right here in prison.
Sidney.
See how much you know. I'm already famous in this prison. Legendary.
I mean, famous all over the world. Could help your situation.
In what way?
You know, go before a parole board, and there it is on your record that you made this huge contribution to society.
I don't even come out for parole till 97.
That could change, too.
What I gotta do?
Tell me how this movement started.
I told you. Started in my head.
You must be a really smart guy.
I am.
How'd you think of something this big?
That just kind of come to me. I just saw the way things kept going all around me. I thought, somebody's got to do something different, change this mess. Then I thought it up.
Wow, I'm impressed. You didn't even hear or see something similar, you know, to put the idea in your head?
Nobody put ideas in my head but me. So how are you going to make me famous? I mean, even more than I already am.
Well, I produce freelance stories. I'll have to get a video camera in here. I'll have to go through channels for permission. Then when we have a spot together, I can sell it to Weekly News and Review. They take almost everything I do.
Think the fools that run this place will do it?
When they find out they have a star in their midst.
Maybe the governor will pardon me when you see it.
You're not exactly on death row, Sidney. I wouldn't count on a pardon. Maybe early parole.
Yeah, well, you do what you can for me, white boy. I'm sure you can see I don't belong here. Big contributions I could be making on the outside. The world need me out there.
Yeah, absolutely, Sidney. I can see that. Chris arrived back in his apartment in New York about 7 o'clock a.m. Right away, he called his cop friend, Roger Meegan, woke him up. That's justice. You did me a good one, buddy. I owe you. I think this is going to be big. I don't know why I think that. No, I don't even think it. I know it. I just know somehow. Maybe it isn't big yet, but it will be. And by then, it'll be my story. Not that I'm at the bottom of it yet, but I will be. Who the hell is this? It's Chris. Did I wake you? He knew damn well he had. Chris, what the hell are you talking about? That story you put me on to. You got to the bottom of that? I told you not yet, but I will. Attracted to this small-time banger, calls himself Sidney G. He says he thought the whole thing up. Oh, he's full of shit, of course. The whole thing up. The movement. This is all part of a movement? It moves, doesn't it? Roger groaned. I don't know what the hell it does, Chris. I haven't even had my morning coffee. Won't loan me some of your energy? I wish I could, he thought. He pulled off his shoes while he talked and fixed himself a drink with a cordless phone clamped under his chin. It's like this, buddy, so far as I can tell. Somebody got it in their head to pass this thing along. It's like a pyramid scheme, only it never goes back to the originators. People just keep doing amazingly nice things for people, and it just keeps going forward. It never goes back. So what's the angle? There doesn't seem to be one. That's why I'm so excited about this, Roger. Thing is, it's a bitch to track down because apparently there are no names involved. People go around saving lives, sparing lives, giving money away, and most of them never know who it was that helped them. No records kept. He'd learned more about this last part from his visit to Stella than his Sidney G interview. Sidney remained sketchy on details. Stella had looked at the five $100 bills in his hand and opened right up.
Oh, that's weird, Chris. This is weird.
Damn right it's weird. That's why I love it.
Hey, but Chris, I mean, if somebody saved your life, wouldn't you get their name so you could pay them back? You know, what goes around comes around. But that's what this is about. You never pay it back. You always pay it forward.
Like, what goes around even faster.
That makes no sense.
Why doesn't it?
What good is it to the person who started it?
Well, this is the world they have to live in, right? A long silence on the line.
So this gangbanger is real altruistic?
No! Hell no, I told you, he's full of shit!
So who started it?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I'm going to do a major puff piece on this jerk, on Weekly News and Review, make him out to be a total hero. Then I'll put out some kind of 800 number or P.O. box or something for people with more information. This thing must have touched a lot of people's lives by now.
Chris, this guy's full of shit. Why do you want to make him out a hero?
Because he's a liar, Roger. And somebody out there knows it. Somebody out there might take offense when they get a whiff of his attitude. Might want to set the record straight.
Sounds like career suicide. You'll come out the fool.
Anybody can be taken in, Roger. My career will survive it.
It's a long shot, Chris.
Life is a long shot, Roger. He hung up the phone. It would work. It had to work. From the Diary of Trevor.
It feels like there's something wrong with not liking your own father. Like, I should be ashamed about that. That's true. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do about it. Yesterday I said that to my mom, that I just don't like him. I thought it might feel better to say it out loud. I thought she would yell at me or hit me or send me to my room. Instead, she just looked tired.
Chapter 22. Arlene. She bumped into Reuben one Saturday morning at a gas station on the Camino. She hadn't seen him in months. She didn't see his white Volkswagen until after she'd gotten out of her car, and when she did, she almost got back in and drove away. She'd left the engine running because the old dart didn't always start again after you turned it off. The sign said not to do that, but Ricky, who always smoked while he filled his tank, told her that almost never goes wrong. Knowing he was there, her heart got to pounding so bad she could hear it in her ears. She felt dizzy and strange, and couldn't decide what to do. And then he came walking out of the convenience store, and he saw her. He turned his gaze down to the asphalt and headed toward her, toward his car. She could tell he wanted to walk the other way. That showed. But she was parked close to his car, so there was no way out for either one of them.
"Reuben,"
she said, thinking her voice sounded scared. He didn't look up. He didn't say anything. She could still hear her heart.
"Reuben, say something, okay? Yell at me or swear or something. Please?"
He looked up. She met his eye. It made her dizzy again. He looked away.
"Reuben, I just had to try, you know? I had to. 13 years, Reuben. He's the boy's daddy and all. Scream at me and tell me I hurt you and I'm not even fit to live because I know it's all true. Don't just stand there and say nothing."
He walked around the pump island, right up to where she stood. The toes of their shoes almost touched. He looked deadly calm, and she figured he was going to hit her. It would almost have been better if he had. She looked at his face so close up like that, and it struck her that she'd missed him. Struck her so hard it almost knocked her down.
"He impregnated you,"
Reuben said. She'd never heard his voice like that before. Deep. Scary, almost.
"What other way has he been a daddy to that boy?"
"Well, that's just it, don't you see? He wants to make up for that now. He wants to pay back what he took from me."
She winced, sure she was about to be struck. Reuben turned away. He walked to his car and drove off without looking back. That was a lot worse. When she got home, Ricky was lying on the couch, watching TV.
"You moved any muscle at all since I left you?"
"I don't need a lecture today," he said.
He barely moved a muscle to say it.
"Thought you was going to look for work."
"On Saturday?"
"Any old day would do. And if you ain't going to do that, at least pick up your clothes and do your own damn dishes."
He swung around and sat up slowly, like it hurt him to do it.
"What the hell got into you this morning? I ain't never heard so many complaints come out of you all at one time."
"I've been saving them up."
"I will look for work," he said slowly. "When I have me a little more time sober. Ain't easy just cold turkey like that."
He lit a cigarette, a little unsteady at it.
"When the shaking stops, say. Right now I'm taking on about all I can."
"Yeah, well, if you'd kept it up, you'd have almost 4 months sober instead of just a handful of days. When I had me just a week or two sober, I had to work 2 jobs to keep up the payments on that goddamn truck you dished me with. And take care of a kid on top of that. I didn't have no goddamn choice."
"Thought I told you I didn't need no goddamn lecture!"
It came out so loud, so strong and angry, she wouldn't dare say anything else. Which she guessed was probably the point.
"What the hell got into you, huh, Arlene? You hear me talking to you? Can't I do anything right anymore?
I don't know, Ricky, can you?
Even in the sack now, where we always got on good before, I just can't do nothing right with you. Not that we ever do now."
"We do sometimes.
Lady, what you give me ain't hardly enough to starve a man."
He crossed the room and stood close, which felt vaguely threatening.
"Used to you'd say I was the best you ever had."
She stood up to him anyway. Kind of quiet, but she said what she needed to say.
"Sad commentary though it may be, Ricky. I suppose that was true at the time."
Then she stood, without backing off, and blinked too much, waiting to see what he would do. He didn't explode the way she expected. Just brought his hand up to his face and rubbed his eyes, like the whole thing made him feel tired. She watched his face and wondered why she used to think he was so handsome. He wasn't really. At least not taken one feature at a time.
"I just wish to God you hadn't said that. This is about that colored man, right?
I hate to even talk about that. How could you let that man in your bed? For God's sake, Arlene, first time I saw him sitting there on the couch, I thought, well, at least I know she ain't sleeping with him. Every time I think about it, I just...
She looked up to see Trevor standing in the kitchen doorway.
I thought you were playing outside.
No, I was in my room.
He turned and slipped away again. She followed him down the hall and into his bedroom.
Trevor, honey, I'm sorry you had to hear that.
She waited for him to say something back, but the waiting hurt, so she couldn't do it for very long.
I ran into Reuben this morning. Oh, yeah?
But said with little emotion.
I thought you'd be interested in that. I see him at school all the time.
Oh, right.
Does he ever ask about me? No.
That's all he said. Just no. Kind of flat and cold. He didn't go on to say, why should he? But Arlene could hear it anyway. She could feel that place in the air between them that those words didn't fill.
Honey, I know I made a mistake. So fix it.
I don't think you understand, Trevor.
Tears took hold against her will. They felt hot and angry. She could think of all kinds of things he wouldn't understand, including some she didn't understand herself, like why she wasn't ready to give Ricky the boot, even as bad as things were going. She chose to state the one reason that lay completely out of her hands, the part she could not change if she tried.
Reuben's real upset, honey. He got hurt. No matter what I said to him, he wouldn't take me back now. No way. You didn't see him this morning, honey. He's real upset. He ain't never going to forgive me.
You don't know that he wouldn't.
I know.
You don't know until you ask him.
I know now.
You should ask him.
I can't, Trevor.
Why not?
He'd say no.
So? You could ask.
See, honey, you don't understand. Like I said, I guess it's a grown-up thing.
She looked over her shoulder on the way out of his room. Trevor looked down, picking nervously at the bedspread.
Maybe I don't want to be a grown-up then.
Well, honey, nobody really does. God knows it got shoved on me against my will.
She closed the door quietly behind her. When she got out to the living room, the TV was still blaring, but no Ricky. His GTO was missing from the driveway. The dirty dishes and clothes were all still there. She was halfway through the dishes when she heard a knock on her kitchen door. She opened it, and Bonnie came through like a freight train. Might have mowed her right down if she hadn't jumped out of the way.
Girl, are you actually trying to be the stupidest woman on the planet, or did it just happen that way by accident? My God, girl! You had that honest, decent man who loved you and wanted to marry you. What's the matter? Afraid you might get happy?
It's been going on for months, Bonnie. Why get on me now?
I just now heard it. You conveniently forgot to tell me. Just so happens you haven't called your sponsor since October. What a coincidence. I got news for you, girl. You don't call your sponsor for more than 4 months, you don't have a sponsor.
Arlene took a deep breath, bent on remaining calm. Her blood pressure had been an issue lately. She poured two cups of coffee and set them on the kitchen table.
Then why is it I got a lady in my kitchen yelling at me?
You don't want me here? I could go just as easy.
I want you here, Bonnie.
She sat down in front of her own cup and put her hands over her face.
Life kept taking too much out of her. She was going to run out any minute. She could feel it. I just want you to say you're still my sponsor.
The tears wanted to come back. Probably she'd be too tired to stop them. Bonnie sat down in front of her coffee.
If you're still halfway interested in taking my advice,
telling me how to undo all the mistakes I've been making...
That's a good start. Okay. Number one, pack up all his stuff and put it out on the lawn.
He's trying, though, Bonnie. He really is. He's sober and going to meetings. It takes a while to change. You know that.
Girl, unlike you, I go to every meeting they hold in this town every day. If he was going to meetings, don't you think I'd know it?
He says he's going.
And you're just stupid enough to believe it. Want to know where he's been?
Something about the way Bonnie said that told her that she held some kind of card. Arlene didn't want to see the face on that card. She tried to answer, but nothing came out.
Hanging out over Stanley's.
Who's Stanley?
Wake up, girl! Stanley's, the bar, on the Camino.
He's been drinking?
With his ex-wife, Cheryl what's-her-name.
You're making that up.
There's a buzzing in her ears, like a mild shock, and a numb feeling to go with it. Lots of lies in a small town. This was just one more.
How the hell would you know anyway? You never go to bars.
Me and Loretta had to go by, make us a 12-step call. I didn't know the guy from Adam, because it's not like I'd seen him at any meetings or anything. Loretta, she told me who he was. She didn't want to tell you. Now you ready to put that fool's clothes out on the front lawn?
Arlene took a breath and tried to know what she felt. She knew she should be ready now. They'd hit low enough.
If it's true.
Would I tell you if it wasn't true?
I'll just ask him right to his face.
Oh, right. And he'll tell you the whole truth.
I'll see what he says.
And if he says one thing and I say another, then who are you going to believe?
Arlene folded her arms onto the table and let her head fall into that dark cradle. It wasn't nearly comfort enough.
I didn't think he'd do this to me, Bonnie.
Why not? He always did before. And you know what I always say.
Yeah, yeah, sure, Bonnie. If nothing changes, nothing changes. If you always do what you always did, then you'll always get what you always got. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and every time expecting a different result. I'm up to my ears in little slogans, Bonnie. It ain't doing me no good. I really screwed up everything, didn't I?
Silence. Then she felt Bonnie's hand on her back.
I'll just leave you to hold that good thought for a while.
Arlene heard the kitchen door close. She didn't bother to raise her head. That same evening, Arlene was sitting on the couch watching TV with Trevor, watching that program called Weekly News and Review, which she never found all that fascinating anyway, and her thoughts ran elsewhere. She knew pretty much what Ricky would say when she mentioned Cheryl Wilcox. He'd say Arlene had given him no choice, that if she wanted him at home, she should have given him a little more to stay home for. She was thinking she should have talked to Bonnie about the sex, tried to explain that she couldn't make it work with him now. They had, of course. They did. But it didn't really work for her. There was something about it. Something heartless, maybe. Yeah. Maybe that was just the word. And Bonnie would have said, yeah, well, everything changes. But it wasn't a change. It was just how it had always been with him. The only thing that had changed was her. Anyway, none of that mattered now. She pulled her attention back to the program. Trevor said,
hey, this might be interesting.
What might? I missed what he said.
Next story coming up is about how gang violence might be about to become a thing of the past, because, like, one person came up with an idea to change everything.
I'm sorry, I forgot to pay attention.
That's like what I was trying to do, only not with gangs, just, you know, one person changing everything.
By now, the program had gone to commercial. She heard the loud, unmuffled motor of Ricky's GTO in the driveway. Her heart jumped. She reached for the remote control and shut off the TV.
Go on into your room now, honey. I wanted to watch this program.
I'm sorry, honey. This is important. I gotta have a private talk with your daddy.
He left the room like he'd been told. When Ricky swung the door open, she could tell he'd been drinking. He was trying to hide it. Maybe that's how she could tell. He was trying too hard to hide it.
We need to talk, Ricky. Oh, not now, hon. I'm gonna take a hot shower.
That's good. You do that.
While he did, she packed up all his belongings, which really wasn't much, and loaded them into his GTO. She left him one pair of jeans, one shirt, and one pair of socks, which he laid out on the bathroom sink.
Don't need those, hon. I'm going right to bed.
Fine. I'll call Cheryl and tell her you'll be right there. I'll tell her to turn down the bed.
And she did. Ricky dressed and left with no word spoken. And remarkably, no trouble. Chapter 23. Chris. The 800 number rang directly into his home. And rang and rang. It rang intermittently in the middle of the night, jarring him out of sleep. The caller seemed surprised, at least as surprised as Chris. They mumbled that they had expected an answering service or a voicemail or something. Most wanted more information about the show they'd seen earlier that night. Nobody seemed to have information. Everybody seemed to want it. At 6 in the morning, he gave up, drank a pot of coffee, and watched the phone. It didn't ring for hours. He fixed himself a small glass of brandy, feeling he deserved it somehow in lieu of sleep. And peace. He wanted peace. He thought of it as artificial peace, but he needed more than a small dose of peace, so he poured another. At 9:10, the phone rang again. The caller said, "I want to talk to someone who's responsible for that stupid news program last night." "Well," Chris said, "the thing is, you are." He listened to a silence on the line.
"Huh? I am?"
"Yes, you are. My name's Chris Chandler, and I wrote, produced, researched, and otherwise put that story together."
"Well, that was a piece of crap, man."
"Everybody's a critic." He took a long pull on his brandy. It was helping him feel more relaxed.
"I can't believe you bought that crap about that guy, Sidney G. Man, he is such an asshole. He is a total liar, totally. How could you have bought all that crap?"
"Actually, I didn't."
"You didn't?"
"No."
"You didn't believe he thought up that whole thing?"
"No."
"Then why did you make that stupid story?"
"Well, it's like this. I know he's a liar, but what good does it do to say so? I got nothing to go by. I don't really know. I was hoping somebody who actually knows something would help me call him a liar." Chris did not feel inclined to believe he had such a person on the line, or, suddenly, that he likely ever would.
"Well, I know something, and I say he's a liar."
"You know where he got this idea?"
"Yeah. He got it from me."
"Oh, right, kid. I see. It's not all Sidney G's idea. He's just a lying asshole. You thought the whole thing up. You deserve all the credit." "Okay, so you're the real hero, and I should do a show about you."
"No, I didn't think it up. I just paid it forward. I just found that asshole getting beaten half to death behind a bar in a Tascadero, and I saved his butt. I told him about the movement."
Chris felt a little tingle behind his ears. A Tascadero. Stella said Sidney hid out in a Tascadero when things got too hot. But he hadn't mentioned that in the story. He quite purposely hadn't, because he didn't want Sidney to know he'd ever talked to Stella. What's your name?
Matt.
I'm sorry, Matt, if I was being a little rude. All night I've been up talking to people who know less than I do about all this. So, listen, you don't happen to know how this thing got started, do you?
Only that it didn't start with that asshole, Sidney G.
And you don't know who it was that paid it forward to you?
Well, yeah. Of course I know that. Her name was Ida Greenberg.
Wait just a second, okay, Matt? I have to get a pen. I had to get a whole lot of information before you hang up. Don't hang up, okay? Chris sat baking for a moment at the curb. A Tascadero was hot. Unbelievably hot. The guy who rented him the Ford said this was unseasonable. Like that should somehow help. Chris had rented the Fairmont at the San Luis Obispo Airport. It felt boxy and strange, like something his father would drive. It did not have air conditioning. He checked the address again, the one that Mrs. Greenberg's neighbor had given him, supposedly the address of a son, the sole surviving heir. He shut down the engine and walked up to the door. He knocked. Waited. Knocked. He heard the sound of a small, high-revving engine, like a power mower. He couldn't tell if it was coming from the backyard of this house or the house next door. He walked around to the back and looked over the ancient wood fence. A man in his 40s was cutting the grass. He wore a sleeveless white T-shirt and tight jeans that made his gut and love handles stick out in sickening relief. Dark hair jutted out at the collar and sleeve lines. Chris already didn't like him. He didn't seem like a man who would keep an obsessively neat garden, but that's what Chris saw. Flower beds covered in chips, roses trimmed and tied back. Not one blade of crabgrass on the lawn. Seemed this guy could tend his yard, but not himself. He called hello a few times, but couldn't make himself heard over the roar. He leaned on the fence and waited, feeling sweat creep down the nape of his neck and run down his back. When the man finally saw Chris out of the corner of his eye and looked up, Chris waved his arms. The man stopped and cut the motor, leaving just a humming echo in Chris's ears and a welcome silence. "I'm looking for Richard Greenberg. Would you happen to be him?" The man wiped his forehead with the back of his hand and ambled over to the fence. He didn't seem to be in much hurry.
"My name is Richard Green.
Oh, maybe I got my information wrong. I'm looking for Ida Greenberg's son, Richard.
Yeah, okay, you got him. What do you want?
I just wanted to ask you a few questions.
About what?
About your late mother? Richard snorted.
Not exactly my favorite topic.
Why's that?
I got my reasons.
Because she didn't leave you anything?
What the hell do you know about that?
Hey, who are you anyway? You some kind of friend of hers?
Yeah. All right. She stiffed me when she died. You know that much. Left me $1. Left the rest of her life insurance to these people she hardly knew. That's what kind of swell lady my mother was. What the hell do you want to know and why?
That's what I wanted to talk about. Her will. What about her house? Did she own it?
Her and the bank. She left me in the cold, I'll tell you. One lousy friggin' dollar. Now I gotta live over this guy's garage and do his garden so he'll give me a break on the rent. Which is kind of ironic, because I think the reason she stiffed me was that she got mad at me because I didn't do her garden. I figure this is like Ida's revenge.
What the hell is your stake in this? I'm just a reporter looking into a story. It seems like she was passing on some kind of, I'm not sure how to explain it. Like a chain letter, but with deeds instead of letters.
I don't know nothing about that. I got no idea why she did it.
He turned quickly and started back to his mower. Chris reached into his pocket and pulled out the photocopy Matt had made for him and given to him on his arrival, the letter.
I'll tell you why she said she did it.
Richard turned back.
Said to who?
One of the people she left the money to? In this letter. He moved closer again.
That crazy cat lady?
No. The kid from the grocery store.
Oh, right. That was so rich. What a slap in the face. I've been her son for over 40 years. These two little teenage slobs bag her groceries and they get my money.
He ripped the photocopy out of Chris's hand. Chris watched him read silently for a few seconds.
I don't trust that he would use it the right way. Oh, that's a good one. Christ, I would have invested it in eating. That's such a lie. She was pissed about the garden.
He threw the letter up into the air. The pages fluttered onto the still uncut grass.
I said I'd do it. She finally paid some kid to. Said she didn't pay him. He did it for free. Yeah, right. Kids love to do that. She was obsessed with that garden. She never loved me that much. I gotta finish here.
He walked away from the fence again.
Excuse me, can I have my letter back?
Richard ignored him and pulled the string on the lawnmower. The noisy engine jumped to life. Chris pulled himself to the top of the fence and scrambled over, rescuing the letter just before Richard could run it through the shredder.
Did you talk to the lady at the cat shelter?
Yeah, she really didn't know Mrs. Greenberg at all.
Well, I didn't really either. I just ran her groceries over the scanner.
Terry stood in the alley behind the grocery store, lighting an already half-smoked cigarette with a disposable lighter.
I know, I shouldn't smoke. I'm trying to quit, really. That's why I only smoke half at a time.
Chris sat on his haunches with his back up against the brick of the building, his eyes closed against the heat and glare. A light breeze had come up, and even the breeze felt hot. He shrugged slightly.
I didn't say anything.
No, I know you didn't. I don't know. I wish I could help you.
Did you talk at all when she came in?
Barely. She usually complained about her arthritis. She was nice, though. I make her sound like she wasn't, but she was. Nobody likes to listen to someone complain about aches and pains, but I figured she had to tell somebody, you know? She was lonely. Her husband died. So I listened. Now I'm glad I did. I mean, for $8,000, she could have told me about every ache she ever had.
Do you remember the last time you saw her?
Kind of. She was in a good mood.
What did she say?
Terry let her head drop back and closed her eyes. Blew smoke up into the heavy heat. She shook her head.
Oh, it was such a long time ago, you know?
Okay, I understand. Look, I'm staying at the Motel 6. Maybe another day, maybe two. I don't know. Maybe I'm wasting my time and I should go home. But if you think of anything, if anything comes back to you, give me a call, okay?
Sure, okay.
Oh, and if you think of something later... He handed her one of his cards. She read it, slipped it into her shirt pocket, and ground the cigarette under the toe of her shoe.
I guess my break's over. Sorry I wasn't much help.
You were as much help as anyone else, he said, and walked back to his rented oven. He found her house. That was easy. The tricky part was explaining to himself why he bothered. A dead woman's house wasn't likely to tell much of a story. The sun had dipped to a slant, the day's heat broken, but barely. He stood in front of the little blue-gray house and admired the garden.
perfectly tended. Someone new must be living here now. He knocked on the door. No reply. He sank onto the top porch step and began to feel stuck. His motivation to leave drained away. He could go get dinner, but he wasn't hungry. Why go back to the motel when he wouldn't sleep? A boy rode down the street on a heavy old bike, delivering the afternoon paper. He didn't throw one at Mrs. Greenberg's house. Maybe the bank still owned it. But banks don't keep up the yard work, do they? Maybe whoever lived here didn't take the afternoon paper. He took his MasterCard out of his shirt pocket and stared at it. Tapped it on his knee. He'd maxed it out, then transferred the balance to a Visa with a better rate, and sworn he'd cut this one in half so as not to double his debt. But he hadn't cut it in half. He'd used it for a plane ticket, and a motel, and a rental car. And for what? A woman came out of the house across the street to fetch her paper. Chris sprang to his feet.
Excuse me,
he called, and sprinted over. It seemed to alarm her.
No, excuse me, can I just ask you a question about this house across the street?
Old Mrs. Greenberg's house?
Right. Did you know her very well?
Not very.
She crossed her arms, uncrossed them, tugged at her house dress nervously.
My husband doesn't think we should get too friendly with the neighbors.
Is someone living in the house now?
No, it hasn't been sold yet. The bank owns it.
Oh, who's keeping it up so nicely?
I really couldn't say. If you'll excuse me.
She backed through her door and closed it quickly. Chris took a deep breath and walked back to Mrs. Greenberg's front porch. He stood looking through the front windows. Sheets covered the furniture. Everything seemed coated with a fine layer of dust. He collapsed on her steps again. He should just go home. He knew that now. He couldn't interview a dead woman, and even if he could, where would it lead him? Someone paid it forward to her. Maybe she didn't even know that person's name. Maybe she was part of the 12th generation, or the 112th. If he was the best investigative reporter on the whole goddamn planet, and he wasn't, he would never trace it all the way back to its roots. Not without some kind of written record. The paperboy came back and dropped his bike on Mrs. Greenberg's perfect lawn. He came up the walk toward Chris. Chris waited, figuring the kid was heading for him or had something to say to him, but he took a detour around to the side yard. As he walked by, Chris saw he was carrying a bag of dry cat food. When he came back, he had a pair of hedge clippers. "Hi," Chris said as he walked by.
"Hi."
The boy began trimming the hedge that ran like a fence against the neighboring property. It wasn't looking too seedy to begin with. When he'd worked his way closer, Chris said, "You're the one keeping this place up."
"Yeah."
"Who pays you to do it?"
"Nobody."
"Why do you do it then?"
"I don't know. Just because."
He furrowed his brow and concentrated on his work for a moment. Then he looked up and said,
"I don't think she would like to see it get all ratty again. I don't know if she can see. What do you think?"
"About what?"
"Do you think that when somebody's dead, they can still look down like that?"
Chris wrestled with the question for a moment, then shook his head. He'd never really pinned down what he believed in that respect.
"I guess not. I'm not sure."
"No, I'm not sure either. I figured it's better to be safe."
"So you knew her?"
"Yeah."
"Did you know her well?" The boy stopped his work, let the clippers hang straight down from his hand, and scratched his nose.
"Not real well, I guess. We used to talk."
"About what?"
"Well, I don't know. Stuff. Football. This project I was doing for school. She was going to help me with this project, but then she died."
Chris rose to leave. He could talk to every living human being in this city and not stumble on anyone who really knew. But he had to try one more time, because in the morning he now knew he'd be flying home. "You wouldn't happen to know anything about her will?"
"Her what?"
"Her will. Why she left money to certain people?"
"Oh, that kind of will. No, I didn't even know she had a will."
"Yeah, I didn't figure you would. Well, goodbye."
"See ya."
He sat in the car for a few minutes, watching the boy work. Thinking it was odd for a boy that age to work when he had death as the perfect excuse to get out of it. Then he wondered if Mrs. Greenberg was looking down. "If you are," he thought, "how about a clue? How about letting me see something here?" but all he saw was a boy cutting a hedge. He started the motor and drove away. From the Diary of Trevor.
I still don't think even one single person's paid it forward. I guess it was a stupid idea. Only I think Mrs. Greenberg would have, if she could. And Reuben wants to, I know he does, but he just can't think of anything that big. Here's the part nobody seems to get. It doesn't even have to be that big. I mean, not really. I mean, it might just seem big, depending on who you do it for.
Chapter 24. Reuben. Reuben arrived home from school at 4:15. Trevor knocked on his door at 4:30.
Where's Miss Liza?
In the kitchen eating. I just fed her. Is that why you came by, Trevor? To see the cat, or did you want to discuss something?
That second thing.
Reuben stepped back and swung the door wide. Trevor came in and perched on the couch.
If you don't mind.
Of course he minded, considering the possible topics.
Of course not, Trevor. You know you're always welcome here.
Miss Liza came running in from the kitchen and jumped on Trevor's lap.
Wow, she must have heard my voice, huh?
Well, you should be flattered, Trevor. You're more important to her than food.
While he small-talked, Reuben nursed a sinking feeling inside his chest, familiar but more pronounced than usual. He'd thought he would still have Trevor, could always be friends with Trevor, but it hadn't worked out quite that way. It hurt to have the boy around, and Trevor seemed to notice. Trevor's once daily trips to Reuben's house had dwindled. The last time he'd claimed he'd only come to visit the cat, and he hadn't stayed long.
What's on your mind, Trevor?
I was just wondering if you were still going to pay it forward. I guess you don't exactly have to, the way it worked out. I just thought, maybe. I just wondered.
Reuben took a deep breath and sank into his chair. Sometimes when the urge to cry came around, and it did, it seemed to come behind both eyes, like an ancient trace memory.
I've thought about that, Trevor. I guess I still would if I could. I just don't know yet what I could do for anybody. I'm having a hard time with that.
I know somebody who needs something.
Is it someone I know?
Yeah. My mom.
I'm sure your dad can help her, whatever it is.
She threw him out. Besides, he couldn't have helped her with this. This is something nobody else could do except you.
Reuben's chest burned. She'd thrown him out. Did that make everything better or worse?
Look, Trevor, I really respect the work you did on that project, and I'm going to do my part to keep it going sometime with somebody. But the way things stand between your mother and me...
Yeah, that's what she said. She said you were upset. But I thought that makes it really good, you know, because it's supposed to be a big something, you know, a big help. And if you help somebody you really want to help, then that's not very big, you know? But if you're all mad at my mom and you helped her, that would be a big thing.
His fingers scratched behind both of Miss Liza's ears, and she leaned in closer and purred, her eyes half closed. Reuben stood and walked to the window, needing to be as close as possible to somewhere else. His good ear rang, and he couldn't imagine why it should. As if through a long tunnel, he heard himself say,
I'm sorry, Trevor. I'm not sure I'm a big enough man to do something like that.
Trevor's face twisted with disappointment. The cat jumped off his lap and ran back to the kitchen.
Don't you even want to know what it is that she needs?
Better taste in men, he thought. But of course he didn't say it.
Maybe it would be better if we just talked about something else.
Trevor shrugged.
I got nothing else I was going to say.
Tell me more about what you said earlier. You said she threw him out?
He shrugged again.
Not much to tell. They kept fighting. A couple of days ago, she told him to get out, and he did. I guess I'll go home now.
I'll give you a ride.
No, I got my bike out there.
I don't mind. We'll put it on my bike rack.
I guess. I gotta go say goodbye, Miss Liza.
They rode back to Arlene's house in silence. Why had he suggested driving the boy home? He asked himself that question all the way there. If he really didn't want to see her, and he really didn't, why hadn't he just let Trevor pedal home the way he always had? He wanted to ask Trevor if his mother was home or at work, just to prepare himself somewhat, but he couldn't quite bring himself to say the words. He pulled up across the street. Her car wasn't parked out front. A wash of relief and disappointment struck, warring, with Reuben as the unfortunate battleground. He cut the motor and they sat quietly for a minute, listening to an odd intermittent crashing sound, like a series of small car accidents. It seemed to be coming from nearby.
"I wonder what that is," Reuben said absently.
He didn't feel particularly motivated to drive away again.
"I'll see."
Trevor got out of the car, leaving the passenger door open, and walked a few paces. He stopped opposite his own driveway with his hands in his pockets. Then he came back and sat down in the car beside Reuben.
"It's my mom. She's pounding the heck out of that truck with a baseball bat."
A wave of cold numbness struck deep in Reuben's gut. His ear began to ring again, and this time he could hear his own blood rushing around in his head like the ocean in a conch shell.
"I thought she wasn't home."
"No, she's home."
"Her car's not here."
"It broke down. Now she has to take a bus to work. I think that's why she's all mad at the truck. She still has to pay for it. And now she's got to take a bus to two jobs. She had to go back to the Laser Lounge nights."
"Since she threw your dad out?"
"No, all along. He never really made much money or anything."
The ugly metallic sounds of her pounding punctuated their words and their silences.
"That's my baseball bat, too. Man, that thing's never going to be the same."
"I wish I could do that," Reuben thought. It made him feel itchy and explosive, feeling how much he had to vent.
"Did you want me to get her a new car? Is that it?"
"No, that wasn't it."
"You wanted me to give her rides home from work at 3 in the morning? I guess that is a dangerous time to ride the bus."
"I don't think the buses even run that late. No, Harry the bartender drives her home."
Pound, pound. Always the give of metal. No breaking glass. Reuben tried to remember if the truck still even had glass.
"What then?"
What?
Trevor seemed distracted by the noise, too.
"What does your mother need that only I can do?"
"For you to give her another chance. She knows she really screwed up. She knows that now. She does that a lot, screws up. You know, like, sees a good thing and a bad thing and takes the bad one. She's not dumb. She knows. I don't know why she does it if she knows. It's just this thing she does. She says you'll never forgive her, but I figured, well, you could. It would be a really big thing. But you could. If you wanted to do a really big thing for somebody, I mean, I remember you asked me once how you do something really big like that. You remember? And I said, well, you just look around and find somebody who needs something. So she does. Need something. I just thought you'd want to know."
The interior of the car rang with the absence of words. The pounding continued outside. Reuben could hear Trevor's breathing. He wanted to hug the boy because he missed him, but nothing moved.
"I'm sorry, Trevor. I can't."
"Okay."
"I'm sorry."
"Okay. She said you'd say that."
"You talked about this with her?"
"Not exactly. She just said you were upset and you would never forgive her. But I said she should ask, but she won't because she knows you'll just say no. So I asked."
"I'm sorry, Trevor."
"Okay. Whatever."
The pounding stopped suddenly. The unfamiliar silence felt strange and stunning. Trevor got out of the car without saying goodbye. He took his bike down and walked it across the street. Reuben waited and watched until Trevor closed the front door behind him. He started up the engine. As he cruised by the mouth of the driveway, he braked slightly. He didn't tell his foot to do that, but it did. Arlene stood with the bat on her shoulder, panting and sweaty. She looked up and saw him immediately. The bat clattered onto the driveway. Reuben pushed the accelerator to the floor. The little engine sagged, then picked up. In his rearview mirror, he saw her standing in the middle of the street. He heard her shout his name.
Reuben! Reuben, wait!
He swung around a corner, though it would have been more direct to go straight. From Those Who Knew Trevor Speak.
She told me later that she tried to call me. She said she called me every day after that, and I didn't answer. And I thought, how did she know I was home and not answering? Why couldn't I have been out? Nobody ever thought of me as someone who could have just been out. Well, I wouldn't say I was going out a lot at that time, but I didn't just sit there and let the phone ring. I never did that. I don't know why she thinks I did, particularly. Maybe it was during that time I was having trouble with my phone.
He lay on his back in bed, pretending to watch the 11 o'clock news. The cat lay curled on his chest, making it hard to breathe deeply, but he didn't move her. The phone rang, and as he reached for it, the cat stepped off him and onto the bed. As he picked up the receiver, he already knew who it would be. He didn't even say hello, just held it near his ear as though it might be dangerous.
Reuben, please don't hang up.
He hung up. When it rang again, he lifted the receiver and set it on the bedside table. He got up and walked into the living room just to be sure he wouldn't hear anything, if anything was said. He paced around a little, but it made him feel awkward to be naked and exposed, even in the privacy of his house. He walked back into the bedroom and found Miss Liza sniffing the receiver. He picked it up and heard Arlene talking, a long string of breathless sentences, none of which he made out. He yanked the cord out of the wall and threw the phone through the bedroom window. Thought it might make him feel better, like beating a wrecked truck with a baseball bat. It proved disappointing, though. Now, instead of an awkward naked man standing in his room alone, in his life alone, he was all that with a broken window and a warm wind on his naked body and no telephone. He should have known he wasn't the venting type. Chapter 25. Arlene. Trevor had gone to Joe's on an overnight. Arlene sat home alone, thinking how she'd drive by Reuben's if she had a car. Maybe she'd get her courage up, even knock on the door. If she had a car. Which she didn't. And the fact that she didn't made her mad. But her arms ached and trembled from her last attack on the carcass of that old beast in her driveway. How much more could either of them take? And it wasn't really the truck's fault, she had to admit. What the hell had she been thinking, co-signing that shiny new thing while she drove that awful old Dodge Dart? No wonder she was so sure Ricky would come home sooner or later. What a sweetheart deal. Then she got madder thinking of that nice collector's item GTO he drove, all rebuilt from the ground up with shiny chrome headers and a new front end and differential and those big, brand-new monster tires. How did he dare drive off with that thing and leave her with the payments on that truck he totaled? Here it was, her one night off in the laser lounge, and she couldn't even go anywhere. With no strength left in her arms to beat or break anything, all that anger was getting to be a problem. There was a bar on the Camino just a short walk away. But she must not have wanted to take that route, because she called Bonnie at home.
Now what?
Jeez, Bonnie, get in trouble if I don't call you, then you don't seem glad when I do.
I didn't say I wasn't glad. Just waiting to hear what trouble you got in now.
Nothing, really. Just my car died.
So now you're thinking about taking a drink?
Yeah, but that ain't why. Bonnie let the silence fall, gave Arlene the time she needed to sum it all up. But it seemed a little harder now. She was mad at Ricky, right? Bonnie'd probably say, duh, you and everybody else whose path he ever crossed. But she really did her best to explain it, how mad it made her to think about him running around with Cheryl in that nice car, leaving her with that old hulk to pay off, coming home and saying he'd go sober and be what he always should have been for her, then going right back to the same old crap, and now it's too late to ever get Reuben back. Bonnie listened quietly until the part about Reuben. Then she said,
Bingo.
Did I say something smart?
I think you just said what's really eating you. I can understand. You're mad at Ricky. So mad you want to hurt him bad. So you're going to walk down to the bar and throw away clean year of sobriety. Boy, that'll teach him.